Hey, teacher friends, I want to make sure that you know about my two children's books from the Caring Critters series, Felipe the Feeling Frog and Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle. These children's books are invaluable tools for teaching social-emotional skills in your classroom. In Felipe the Feeling Frog, kids walk alongside Felipe as he discovers that all feelings are okay, and he learns practical strategies for regulating his emotions. Felipe and his friends in the book help children identify and manage feelings like sadness, happiness, frustration, making emotional learning engaging and relatable. Then there's Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle, where Trixie explores the difference between expected and unexpected choices. Through her journey, children learn how to make thoughtful decisions that positively affect their friends and understand the importance of respectful behavior. Both books feature the charming illustrations of Denise Walker, which bring these important lessons to life in a way that kids can easily connect with. And they're written by me, a kindergarten teacher who understands the social-emotional needs of young students. Enhance your classroom with Felipe the Feeling Frog and Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle, and watch your students thrive in their social-emotional development with the Caring Critters series. Hey, teacher friends, it's Ziba from Kindergarten Cafe, and today's episode I have on my friend and special guest, Mona from Math Chat Podcast, or on social media, Hello Mona Math. I was actually a guest on her podcast, and she has already been a guest on this podcast, but today we're talking all about the five steps to solving word problems in math. She is a math coach for K to five, but we talk about specifically kindergarten math and what that could look like. In kindergarten, it's a great routine to have to be thinking about and set into place at the beginning of the year. So definitely there's so many nuggets of gold in this one. So many things that I'm excited to take away and use with my students. And I know you will too. So without making you wait anymore, here is my conversation with Mona. You're listening to the Kindergarten Cafe Podcast, where kindergarten teachers come to learn classroom-tested tips and tricks and teaching ideas they can use in their classroom right away. I'm Ziba, creator and founder of Kindergarten Cafe, and I help kindergarten teachers with everything they need from arrival to dismissal in order to save time, work smarter, not harder, and support students with engaging and purposeful lessons. I'm here to cheer you on through your successes and breakthroughs and offer support and resources so you never have to feel stuck or alone. Ready to start saving time and reducing your stress, all while using effective and purposeful lessons that students love? Let's get started. Welcome, everyone. I have Mona here, and I'm so excited. You're a returning guest to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. So in case people didn't hear the earlier episode, which I will link, because that earlier episode, you coached me through starting a new program that I hated for math and helped me get a lot more comfortable with listening to my gut instincts and not being so like by the book about the program and really doing, you know, what was right for the kids in front of me. So anyway, listen to that episode if you haven't already. But Mona, do you want to introduce yourself to everyone?
Sure. Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. This is so fun to talk. I feel like that last episode was so good for me too. So definitely check it out. But I'm Mona and I am a math coach for elementary grades. And I am an independent math coach. Let's talk about that. So I used to be an elementary teacher and I taught for 15 years in Chicago Public Schools. And for like the first four of those, I was like the elementary primary teacher who just loved all the things reading and writing and field trips and science experiments and not really like anything to do with math. In fact, for those first 4 years, all I did was just open the curriculum, deliver the lesson however I could get through it, and then close the book and move on to the fun stuff.
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yes, right? And I also think this, people who, like us, teach all the things, right? In elementary, we teach all the things. Sometimes you just need one thing that you just kind of do, right? Not all in on it. And so I'm conscious of that now as a math consultant and coach, because it can't be your goal every year to change and revamp your whole philosophy and situation, right, on everything. So okay, anyway.
First of all, just pause. Thank you so much. I wish we, I'm lucky enough. I do have literacy coaches and math coaches. And I do feel like even not even coaches, just the departments, like the math department in my district gets it. Like you, they're like, it's one subject of the whole day.
Right.
Other departments so far, certain ones, I won't name names, haven't felt that way. And it's like, you should be doing your entire day with this subject. And we're like, we have other things to cover. So thank you for being realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And plan, right? You only have at most five preps, maybe a few more each week. And mm-hmm. so you have to have things that you can do in your day that are just like routine. And I feel like I'm jumping ahead, but like that's at the heart of my work, which is just making teaching math both enjoyable for the teacher that might not have had a great experience with math, because that was my experience, was that as a student, I never felt like a math person. I was really good in social studies debate and writing my thoughts and getting creative. And I didn't see myself having those opportunities to show my strengths in math class. From a very early age, I remember being like, math isn't for me. And that's how I approached it as a teacher. Until I had the opportunity to learn that, like, actually, you can teach math in a student-centered way that allows kids to build on what they already know and can do. And I know your audience is an audience of early childhood educators, and all of you know that little kids know a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And too often, adults are like, no, honey, you don't know that. Let me show you how to mm-hmm. do it. But, like, a three-year-old knows what half of a cookie is. And, like, they don't need a fraction lesson. They know that, right? And so we know about fair share. We know about getting more things and somebody taking our things. And we know that. We have all of that, like, early math knowledge. And that it just gets more and more as kids get older. And so I learned that there's all this research that like talks about how to capitalize on that and like start from a place of what our kids already know how to do and then meet them there and deepen that understanding of math through all the things I love, discussions, like discovery and inquiry and sharing and all these things that like get me jazzed about teaching is like listening to kids thinking and letting and teaching them how to talk to each other and, you know, debating on what's the best way. That's what gets me excited about teaching. And so as soon as I realized you could teach math like that, I was like, oh my God, I got to go tell everybody. Like this is, nobody knows this. Like nobody knows this. We're all just here thinking that that only happens in lit circles and in writer's workshop. And so who's teaching us that like math doesn't have to be terrible to teach? And so that's what I'm up to these days.
I love that. I'm sure everyone can relate. I mean, I'm certainly relate because I hated math as a kid. I was not good at it. And so then when I was teaching, like you said, it was like the thing that I didn't have to think about. But as I continued to teach it, I realized actually I can teach it in a way that I wish I had learned.
Yes.
And that made it so enjoyable to teach. It was one of my favorite, I think it was my favorite like part of the day to teach. But then we got the new curriculum and it was a whole adjustment to everything. And this, you know, I'm all about like hands-on learning with kids in math and like letting them play games and practice with, you know, hands-on materials and exploring for themselves. And this new curriculum, it was a big shift because it's a lot of like talking about math. And you specialize in the talking about math, like you were just saying. And you actually have a new book coming out, which I'm very excited about. So I don't know if you want to tell us about that.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about talking about math mm-hmm. in the book. Okay. So the book is called Word Problem Workshop. And this really comes out of research called Cognitively Guided Instruction, which is an early childhood research, if anybody wants to really nerd out on some math research. But the idea that I was just talking about how kids innately are problem solvers, that's what that research tells us, that they have strategies before we ever teach them strategies, that we just have to structure our classroom in ways that lets kids like bring up those strategies, right? And so when I learned about that research, I really thought, okay, this is great, but there wasn't really like a structure, right? Like, how do I do this every day?
Mm-hmm.
The curriculum that I have. And At the time I was using like Eureka, like there's so much in Eureka. I can't even fit it all in as is. Mm-hmm. How can I also provide this time for my students to like use manipulatives and use what they know and problem solve and then circle up and talk about what they did and learn from each other? And at the time I was teaching third grade, and the thing is like, I can let kids like go and do a center, but I don't actually know if they're like doing the deep mm-hmm. thing I want them to do. And so I knew it needed to be like more of a whole group situation so I could do the like orchestrating, right? Like, that's what Peg Smith and Mary Kay Stein tell us from Five Practices for Orchestrating Math Discussions, which is you're not leading it. You're orchestrating kids doing it. And so I love this idea that like kids are doing the heavy lifting in the discussions as well. Because if there's anything kindergartners can do, it's talk.
Sure okay. thing.
Obviously, I can talk too. Let's get back to it. Okay. I wrote a book all about this structure that I came up with in my class that's informed by all of this research I was reading. Because as soon as I learned that math didn't have to suck, I was like, okay, show me how, right? I'm reading all these books and I'm like, cool, but like, how does this actually show up in the classroom?
Because so many times people doing the research and doing the theorizing have never actually, or even making the curriculums, have never stepped foot in the classroom or tried it out.
Or it's been a really long time, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's just some realities that we can take that or that research and really make it approachable in our own classrooms. And so I've been working on this for, I don't know, 10, 12 years. And I got it down and it's just really working. And it's 5 steps, which is the subtitle of the book, 5 steps to creating a classroom of problem solvers. And it's 5 steps every day. And the whole point of this is to create a routine that takes the like thought process, the planning, because here's the thing, hold up. Your curriculum, I know your feelings about it. Your curriculum has a different lesson structure every day. Am I right?
I hate that. Kids need routine.
Yes, it doesn't make any sense. Like the content of our curriculums are fine, right? But our curriculums are not teaching us how to be teachers. They're not giving us instructional strategies. And so what's going on right now with curriculums, in my opinion, is that they're trying to layer in instructional strategy, right? Whereas like the old school curriculums were just the problems in the book. And then the teacher decided how to get kids to learn it. Well, what that ended up leading us to was the I do, we do, you do default. I'm just going to show you how to do it. And you all are going to practice the 30 problems in the book, mm-hmm. which isn't exactly the best, right? And so I think where we're at is the curriculum is just layering in too many instructional strategies. And when you confuse, you lose, right? Like we just have to simplify. And so that's the goal of this book. It's let me just show you what actually works in my classroom and in the hundreds of teachers that I have in person taught this to. And yeah, it's 5 steps. Here they are. Launch the problem. Grapple, give kids time to productively struggle, to get the manipulatives out, to try it, to fail, to try again, and to maybe not ever solve the problem correctly. Fine, that's okay. We have to have a problem-solving experience if we are going to develop reasoning and strategic competence, right? We want kids to apply strategies in context, then we have to give them time to practice that. After we grapple, then we share. Strategically choosing a couple kids to share their work for the class. And then the whole class now doesn't have to discuss their own strategy. Because what happens in grapple time is sometimes we don't have a strategy. We didn't solve the problem. Now all of a sudden, we talk about the share. Who shared, what they shared, who was efficient, who was effective. And then we're having this little discussion all about that, which leads us to the learning goal. And then finally, in the 5th step, which I think is the most important step, reflect, which is where kids reflect on that experience that they just had and they apply what they may have learned in that experience, or just they're going to give it another shot in another problem. So it's 2 problems, whereas we might be facing a curriculum that's asking us to do 12 problems, but it's 5 steps 2 problems a day. And yeah, it's great. You're going to love it.
Listening to you, I'm like nodding my head because I'm like, wow, that is like all of the things that when my lesson goes right and feels good, that's what I'm doing.
That's great.
And so that's good to hear. I think the hardest part for me switching over to this kind of math teaching was productive struggle. And I think it probably is for most early childhood educators anyway, because we want to teach, we want to help our students, we're helpers, and to watch them struggle is hard, and to not jump in and immediately be like, great, you're struggling, let me help you right now. Mm-hmm. So what could you say about that?
I think, though, it's not about not jumping in. It's about how we jump in. Mm. It's about what we do when we support the struggle. Because, and I talk like about this, tons about this in the book. So instead of seeing a kid who like doesn't know how to start, right? And they're just sitting there, they're making like swords with their manipulatives, and they're just like not doing anything. And they're just like, fine. Right. We're going to jump in there. And you could be like, OK, it's 13 and 7 fly away. Great. Make 13 here. Let's use the blocks and make 13. And then you start showing them how to make 13. Right. So instead of doing all that, maybe we say, hey, can I read the problem to you again? Or I'm going to read the problem and then I'm going to ask you how you're going to use these blocks to show the number of birds in the tree or whatever it is. And so it's supporting kids in making sense of the problem, because that's what productive struggle is about.
It's the power of our questions as opposed to just giving them the answers. Like, what questions can we pose to students to let them do the work? Like you said, do the heavy lifting.
Yeah. But sometimes our questions, we mask our questions, right? Like, we're like, well, there's how many birds? 13, right? Remember what we know about 13 teen numbers, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
And so you just have to like, what I like to call is like have a neutral stance, right? Where you're neutral, because here's the thing. When we jump in to rescue kids, we take their opportunity to like understand and learn away. And if you think about it like that, like, this kid's mad because they can't figure out what to do next, right? A different scenario. I don't know. Just tell me if I'm right, right? Like, aren't they always?
Yep, they love that.
Yeah. Tell me, is this right? Is this right? And you're just like, I don't know, honey. What do you think? You know? And they're like, I don't know. Just tell me. My mom tells me. My grandma tells me. Will you just tell me? And you have to remember that you are providing them that opportunity to learn how to decide if they're right. And so, it's way better than like an estimating worksheet, right? We can, the reasonableness of your answer, we can do those worksheets, that's fine. But doing it in context after you have just tried to solve, well, I don't know. Does it make sense that there's 28 birds in the tree now after 7 flew away? What do you think? Do you want me to read the problem again? I always read the problem again. That's what I would say about productive struggle. It's not that you don't step in, it's the way you step in.
But the what if...
Go ahead.
What if it's, because your scenarios were great, but like when I struggle with not jumping in is when they're doing it completely.
Right.
Like maybe you're like on day 3 and you've highlighted the strategies that you want to, like, you know, later in the year we'll do word problems, right? Which is what your whole book is about. But, you know, story problems, I guess I should say, for kindergarten. And we're talking about like how to draw shapes to represent what we're talking about to, and I highlight the strategies. When we come together, I highlight the strategies of like, oh, this person used a very simple circle to represent the bird instead of drawing the bird because that took so long to draw, you know, and like that is my main goal is like, I want you to just draw a circle to represent the thing we're talking about. And I've talked about it and I've talked about it and we've come together and we've shown the problems. And then I send them off the next day to go do a story problem and I get to a table and the kid is literally drawing the detailed bird and taking forever to draw the 10 birds. And I'm like, this, I don't know what to do anymore. So like,
that's so real though. That's so real. So yeah, I think it's like, then you are, the first thing I would do is I would just walk up and I would be like, are you drawing efficiently? Tell me about your efficient strategy. Mm. And then they're like, what? Well, you don't remember yesterday we talked about how circles are so efficient. go back and look at Lisa's drawing, right? Nobody's named Lisa these days, but but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Go back and look at the chart where we shared Lisa's. She drew circles. Remember, we talked about how that was efficient. Oh, I'm going to draw birds. Okay. Right. And then you move on. And it's just like you. Okay. Because you can't make anybody do anything. We all know. They're all going to come around to it when they come around to it. I will say what I have found as step three is share, which is the motivator for grapple time. It's the motivator for kids to use efficient strategies and to level up their strategies, is because I'm only choosing people to share that are like doing something worth sharing. Does that make sense? It's not like an opportunity for me to like highlight everyone and give a participation ribbon. No, no, no. This is about our actual learning. And so I'm only choosing people that are highlighting my learning goal. So nobody drawing birds is going to get up there. Nobody. And you can even be explicit about that of like, hey guys, look, I chose circles and squares because those are efficient to draw. So if you all want to come up here and feel special and get to like stand in front of the class and tell us what you did and why you did it, and you're still drawing birds, it's not going to be your turn this week, right? Like, be explicit, right? Be really explicit with what you want them to put on the paper. Like, I want a clear, easy to look at model of these birds. And it can't take you 72 hours because we have 7 minutes.
I guess I just like second guess everything I'm going to say in this moment of grappling, right, with the kids. Because I'm like, how much help is too much help? How much can I say? Like, if they're really, like, if we're, okay, this time of year, we're doing counting, right? Mm-hmm. And they are, the goal is to, thinking back in my head, the goal is to use a 10 frame to put the counters in. And they're not using the 10 frame and they aren't counting correctly. They're missing numbers. Mm-hmm. I'm talking this out loud.
I could
offer them a number line so that they could like just offer them a different tool, like asking like, do you want to try this tool?
Well, and that's I not, think like,
telling
well, I think there's this. I think it's like with counting, we always are thinking about like organization in addition to efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so with counting, it's like, and accuracy, right? So with counting, it's like, hey, I noticed that you're not using a 10 frame or a tool. How are you keeping track? You know, you're just asking questions around organization. Mm-hmm. And like, you really have to get in coach mode, right? And like really think about getting them to answer to you, like answer these questions. So you're like, how are you organizing that so you make sure you don't miss any numbers? And they're like, huh? And you're like, let me ask you again, how are you organizing it? And they're like, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Are you missing numbers? I don't know. Well, let's count again. I have a kindergartner in my life. She's second child. And she's constantly missing numbers and she's constantly counting like a crazy person, just all over the place. And I'm like, Ida, what do we need to do to make sure we count them all? I don't want to count again. And I'm like, you don't have to count again if you go slow the first time, right? And so I like to think about it in two ways, like during grapple time. And I talk about this in the book. These are like my little new catchphrases, either giving a nugget or a nudge. So you can give a nugget, like you were saying, offer them a number line. Mm-hmm. I can see you have a 10 frame here, but you're not using it. Have you ever tried a number line? And you kind of just give that to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could give a nudge of like the questions, right? Like, how are you organizing this? So I don't know.
I love that. That's helpful.
Great, 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 great. I think the art of conferencing during grapple time is an art. Like, you will get better at it. And you said earlier, I just feel so much pressure. Look, this time has to be low pressure for you and the kids because we want them to take risks and we want you to take risks, right? Which is like, try it out. You might lead a kid. You think I've never asked a bunch of leading questions? Heck yeah, I have. You might lead a kid down a path and they're with you. And then they get to the end and they don't have a single clue what they're doing because you did all the thinking. I've done it. I still do it. You know what I'm talking about, right? You're like, walking them through it. And then they're like, But like, that's fine. That was today. You have an opportunity to do something different tomorrow or in the share or in the discussion. You know, you can, you're, the grapple time is not the only time you can support kids thinking. You also can support kids thinking during the discussion. Mm-hmm. So when you ask kids to notice and wonder about the two strategies you've charted up, ask them that notice. I want you to turn and talk. What do you notice about these? What's the same and what's different? And then as the teacher, you like go and lean into those turn and talks and you can coach them right there. Like, what do you mean that one's better? Why? Mm-hmm. Right? And you can get to your learning goal of like, well, they have it, they have them organized in a row. Well, yeah, that is a lot more efficient than just having a mess of circles all over the place, right? Like, why did that help them? Like, mm-hmm. you can ask these questions within the turn and talk. And then what you're doing is you're seeding your discussion. Because we don't have time in kindergarten to be like, just letting everybody just kind of vibe out and talk. Nope. Because no time. It's just chaos then, right? So you have to go into that discussion knowing who's got an idea and who you want to talk, and without making it like a pressure thing or whatever. But while you're walking around during grapple time, you don't have to help everybody. You can be thinking about structuring, orchestrating your discussion. So you're walking around going, okay, I'm going to have Mia talk about lining them up. And then you're just going to go in and say, hey, I noticed you put all these in a line. I'm not going to have you share your strategy today, but when we talk about them, I want you to talk about lining them up. Great. Now we know we're going to Mia for that little point. And you're just kind of like starting to notice what strategies kids are using so you can start to piece it together and then cold call those kids to talk during the discussion.
That's so much to think about, but in a good way, right? Like, I'm just like, oh, I love this, but I don't want to keep saying I love this because I just realized I've been saying that a lot. But
great. I love that you love it.
I love it. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And so what I think should happen is that of these five steps, you can do all five every day, just like everything else. It's a routine. You're going to teach it. You're going to practice it. Where your focus is might be on the launch, right? I'm just going to focus on the launch in August and September. And then in October, we're really going to nail down like those strategies for grapple time. I'm not even going to conference at all, right? I'm just going to support mindset, which is something I should have said earlier. It's all about creating a classroom of problem solvers. Mm-hmm. The only way this works is if kids are empowered and supported to take risks. And so that happens in writing. Kids are okay, most of the time, kids are okay with like putting some like random picture down and telling you some story that totally doesn't relate to that drawing, but they have this confidence, right? That they're like, yeah, I'm a writer. Cause you built that. You built that community of writers that kids can see like, oh yeah, it's okay for me to not have all the words yet. What are we doing to support that kind of same gusto in math?
Yeah. In kindergarten, they come to school with this mindset of like math is a right or wrong thing. Yeah. There is a correct answer and an incorrect answer.
Yep. Yep. And so really being strategic, and it doesn't have to be the first week. It doesn't have to be the first month. It has to be when you can start being strategic about teaching these things of like math is about your thinking, not your answer. Math is about what you do with these tools, not what you put on paper. You know, like whatever it is. And like, I have all these like math norm posters that, you know, I'm constantly trying to get people to hang in their classrooms, but it has to be for you and your students, right? You have to talk to them about when you're talking, you're learning. That's why I give you all this time to talk. So if you show up in this discussion and you use that time to like tie your shoes or practice how well you can roll backwards on your butt out of this circle, like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, if that's what you use the math discussion for, then you're not learning math. But here, we're all learning from each other. You know, all these things.
Yeah.
And embedded SEL.
Right.
Embedded growth mindset. Yes, we have our time, our morning meeting, or our SEL time. But you have to weave that thread throughout and show kids how it applies to math. Because if your SEL is going to pay off anywhere, I bet you it will pay off most in math class.
Yeah. I mean, that's a bold statement. It's going to pay off all the time. SEL needs to be, like you were saying, it needs to be incorporated throughout the day along with explicit teaching, So I have two follow-up questions to everything you've said. The first is about that explicit teaching. Mm-hmm. What would you say to people who push back on this kind of teaching of math about, like, oh, we're not explicitly teaching kids anymore, like, how to do things? Like, is that necessary? Or are we getting to it in a different way?
Yes, of course it's necessary. And you are getting to it in a different way. And everything is, it's not all or nothing. Nothing is all or nothing anywhere in the whole world, right? And so I think this is the idea of a pushback against the way we were taught didn't work. We know it didn't work because there's so many of us that can talk about our math anxiety, trauma, past was negative. But we also know it didn't work because of research. Like literally all these books in here, you know, like everywhere, like it doesn't work. And so that doesn't mean that it's like you never show kids what to do and that it's just this like free for all, hippy dippy, we're working on vibes. No. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about giving kids a chance to say, I think I can split that 13 up into a 10 and a 3. And that makes it easier for me to think about adding it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what that is. And then you do your teaching in the discussion through your questions, or you straight up right after go, this is what, Jose did. He decomposed the 13 into a 10 and a 3. That's an efficient strategy. We can decompose numbers to, you know, add more efficiently or whatever it is. And that happens kind of at the end of these 5 steps. And so if you think about I do, we do, you do, right? Like, kid participation as a triangle. So at the top, it's I do. Kid participation is that little tiny piece of the triangle at the top. And as we go down the triangle, we do, a little bit more kid participation. And then you do at the bottom is like all kid.
Mm-hmm.
What that is like starts with no kid participation, ends with a lot. What that actually does is just teaches kids to repeat what we show them to do with not a lot of maybe understanding. If you flip that triangle and you start with a you do it first with a lot of kid participation. So now the broad base of the triangle is at the top and that tiny piece is down at the bottom. And we just flip the whole thing. We're going to start with you do. You're going to grapple. Then we are going to share and discuss. And we are going to talk about just a couple strategies that I've orchestrated, that I've chosen, that I'm thinking about, the questions I'm asking to get you to the you do piece, the teacher piece, of like, hey guys, look at this. She drew circles, not cats or birds or whatever. This is what we're doing now. We are drawing circles. When we count, we line them up. We make 6 of 10 out of our Unifix cubes, whatever it is. And then that you do piece has, like, you've built all this engagement. You've built all this connection to what students know and can do because you've given them this experience of trying it on their own and then sharing and discussing. And then you're giving them that teaching point right at the end. And with step 5 of Word Problem Workshop, you're then giving them an opportunity to go and do another problem and apply it right then.
Right. So people that are saying, and I have said it with my curriculum, like there's no explicit teaching anymore.
Yeah.
I can get that back in the discussion and in the sharing of work and stuff. But I can go in at the end instead of I'm used to doing the teaching point at the very beginning. Then they go off and practice. Now we're flipping it. So that teaching point is like wrapping up our problem solving.
Yes. Yeah. And that is constructivist. That is what we believe is good for little kids, right?
That's
good kids in learning is that making that meaning. And so, your teaching point is there. It's been there the whole time. You're just not saying everybody today is using this strategy because 5 kids are on board and they're like, yeah, I get it. And then 16 kids are like, the what strategy? Fine, okay, let me just try to do what she did up there on my paper. And they're just now almost wasting their time, right? Because now they're just like trying to copy and decipher what it is we showed them to do instead of using that time to make sense of it in their own way, which we can then refine.
Mm-hmm. If you had to put more time of your lesson, would it be more in the productive struggle or more in the discussion?
Discussion, 100%.
That's my gut instinct too. Because I think in like my first year trying out this new curriculum, I put more time into productive struggle and then it did not feel good. And then you're not getting to that teaching point.
Yeah. There's also a fine line between productive struggle and unproductive struggle. And you have to keep your finger on the pulse of what is going on in the classroom and cut it off before that wave of unproductive struggle takes over. I like to say, like, third grade, like, 7 minutes, 6 minutes is enough.
Oh, wow, for third grade.
Yeah. Now, I would say it's almost the same as kindergarten because they're using so many manipulatives that it takes them a minute to get them out. Yeah. And, like, they're just all a little pokey. So, you know, giving them some time. But not everybody has to finish.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. That took a while for me to realize that not everyone has to finish. And like we've been talking about, this is one touch point that's building knowledge throughout the unit. And I will say with a little bit more zoomed out experience of seeing this, you know, for 2 years now, it does really inch its way forward slowly. But like, it's hard to see in that day when you're like, they aren't getting the strategy.
Right.
But over time, it does generally build off of each other.
Right, because we have been conditioned to think that kids learn strategies from like one day to the next. Mm-hmm. Our curriculum tells us they should. Like today we're doing make it 10 and tomorrow we're doing counting on, which are like huge concepts. Doesn't even make any sense. Or it's like, we're going to teach them this one little part of make it 10. And then tomorrow we're going to teach them one more little part of make it 10. And by the end of the week, they've got it. Okay, that's still too fast for most kids. Like you think about anything you've learned. That's not how learning works. Anything you've learned is like a crazy little pathway of going back and trying this. And then I get another problem type, right? Or I get a different kind of number. All of a sudden, we have like a teen number versus just one digit numbers or a zero. Now we have a 10. Wait, what do I do with that? Or we're talking about a part whole instead of a joining problem. Any of those things are going to affect how we apply a strategy. And so all that being said, without getting too much in the weeds, it's like we have to give kids time, like consistent time to be able to practice these things at their level. It's the same thing with practicing anything.
Mm-hmm.
They need time. But instead of being like, here's your practice time, do this, do this, do this. It's like, here's your practice time. What do you think is going to work for this? Because that's the life skill.
Yeah.
The life skill is you have a problem. What are you going to do? And I could just a whole nother episode is about like how our kids are like resistant to grappling because of this instant gratification world.
Yeah.
So if we teach them anything in our 6 to 7 minutes of grapple time, it's that.
That's okay not to know. It's okay to come up to try things out and not know if it's right. Get messy with it.
Mm-hmm.
So my final question is about the sharing where you said you're only picking strategies that you want to highlight.
Yep.
And just more pushback so that no one takes this the wrong way, because I know this is not what you meant. But like, what about the kids that never have the right strategy?
Yeah, they might never share.
Really?
Yeah. Really. I'm so serious. How serious is it for you that kids learn math? Like, well, it's serious.
I guess my point is I make an intentional effort then for those kids to find something.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Let me back off on my hardness. Okay. Because I think that, and this is why I'm a hard ass about it, because too often we're just like, oh, that poor baby. Well, no. Let me tell you a story about Nairobi. I knew Nairobi when I taught his brother Greg in first grade. Nairobi is a bouncy ball, like boom, all over the place. I don't even know how old he was, two, one or two. Came in, like a wrecking ball. Let's just say that. Okay. Nairobi is now in college, like that age. And I know his family well. And he was just always that way. He came into my first grade classroom and I was like, okay, listen, I've known you since you were one. We're going to do something different now. Then I taught him again in third grade. There is actually a video of Nairobi and I doing word problem workshop before I called it that. So we'll link it. This is going to be good. Nairobi is the kid who I loved, like loved, and I wanted to see him succeed. And so it would have been easy for me to be like, okay, Nairobi, today you drew 38 apples in circles. Let's get that up on the chart. But what my class was doing at that time was they were drawing 6 to 10 for 38. And them seeing and us taking the time to show the 38 apples wouldn't have pushed their learning forward. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But because I love Nairobi, I want him to have a win. Fine. I could do that. That would be a thing. Like, and you can. You can give a softball sometimes, sure. But what I do more often than not, and what I always did with Nairobi, was I pushed him in the most loving, like, teacher way with questions. Level up. I believe you can do this. You can do this. So let's go. Level up. And in this video, we'll give you the link. You'll see me. I ask him like 18 questions or something. I ask him an absurd amount of questions. It's a longer conference than you're going to have time for every day with every kid. But that's what I would say is that, like, if we lower the bar and we give the softball to the kids that we love and we want to see them succeed, then we're just not doing them a favor. If we keep going with them, if we keep holding them to the high, like that high bar, and keep supporting them and keep asking them the questions, they will get there. There was a kid in first grade last year at the school I was coaching at, and he had not shared until like May. And we were doing our final like learning walk. The teachers were all with me. We were all going into each other's classrooms. And this little baby was sharing on that day. It was like May 12th or something. And it took him all year, but he felt so pumped because like this was finally his moment because he earned it. Now, in the book, I do talk about like how sometimes you pick kids for a confidence boost or like a whatever. But I just always want to say you have to keep in mind and keep it balanced that like you have a learning goal that your students deserve to see strategies that push kids. There are lots of times to feature kids for other reasons. Specifically, like in the discussion or other times, right? But like really hold that sharing sacred.
Okay. And that also keeps it short and sweet too.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's no way you can have 3, 4, 5 people share. Yeah. It's just there's not enough time. I like to keep Word Problem Workshop to like no more than 20, 25 minutes. That's it. So you can't be hitting the softballs to all the kids that need it that
True.
Day.
And it's high expectations with supports.
Yes, that's right. High expectations and high support.
Love it. Love it again.
love it.
Love it all, Mona. Love it all. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking about all of this with you. And I learned a bunch myself and excited to try some things and just weave it into what I'm already doing. So where can people find this amazing book and also hear more from you on your podcast?
Okay. Well, first of all, I always love talking to you, no matter what it's about. You always ask the right questions for like to get to it, right? And so I appreciate
that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm sure that's what your listeners love about you too. Okay. This book is called Word Problem Workshop, if I haven't said it 400 times yet. Go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you buy books. It's there. It is set to release October 28th. You can order it now. You can order it whenever. Yeah, that would be so great. If you do and you get it before the release date, I have a bunch of like pre-order bonuses. So problems you can use, like lots of stuff, lots of goodies that you can just print and start using and doing.
And then it just shows up on your doorstep on release day.
That's right. And you don't even, it's just like a gift.
Yeah, it's like you've already paid for it. So it's like free money.
That's right. We won't call that girl math, but I think that's what people call girl math.
I like just saying free money.
I like free money way better. Okay. Yeah. I also have a podcast called Math Chat Podcast, and I would love it if you listened. Ziba's been a guest before, so we'll link that episode too. And yeah, come hang out if you're really in the mood for more math chats. I'm your girl.
I will credit the math chat with me inspiring me to start my own podcast. And here we are 100 plus episodes later.
Amazing.
So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Mona.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information and resources, or just head straight to kindergartencafe.org for all the goodies. If you liked this episode, the best ways to show your support are to subscribe, leave a review, or send it to a friend. I'll be back next week with even more kindergarten tips. See you then.